kisses. Born from the need to feel connected, to voices strong and uncollected. From island shores to distant lands, we reach across with open hands. Pacifica wire, connecting our voices, lifting every voice higher, on air and online. We're tuning in together, no matter the weather. United we inspire. Pacifica wire, from the heart of the industry to your home and family, with new tech and legacy, we share our destiny. We laugh and we learn, we cry and we cheer. Though miles apart, we're always near. The same show, the same time, a rhythm, a style. Pacifica wire, lifting every voice higher. Stories told side by side, on air and online. Tuning in together, no matter the weather. United we inspire. PacificaWire.com.
It's Planet FM 104.6 on a Saturday afternoon. It's great to have your company here on PW Live. We do hope you are enjoying your Saturday afternoon, and we thank you for tuning in and joining us. And don't forget, wherever you are, we are here with you connecting our voices. Now, this is the part where I turn to this little gadget and speak into it. It's something that I'm still getting used to. This next guest, a very, very special guest and one very dear to our heart, mine and Gary's in particular, in the 80s considered one of the pioneers that helped usher in a new era of listeners and viewers, and becoming much more familiar with Pacific voices, faces and issues. And since the 60s, a journalist from the 80s worked with the former Prime Minister Sir Robert Muldoon, shaping policy and the way we see things. Played such a huge part in the creation of Radio 531 PR. Everybody knows Radio 531 PR, and this gentleman was behind it and has been a force and advocate for not only getting our voices and faces out there in the medium, but also language retention, looking after our taonga, looking after what makes us who we are in terms of our Pacifica. Now, in 2022, received a member of the New Zealand Order of Merit for Tongan and Pacific communities. Also recognised for long service to broadcasting in New Zealand with the New Zealand Radio and Podcast Awards, and continues to work for our Pacifica community. Also with the recognised seasonal employment scheme with the Tongan community, Pacific Languages Strategy Aotearoa New Zealand was part of that as well, and is also part of the Sosaya e te Lea Whakatonga, the Tongan Language Society, and also We're going to hear more about this gentleman who delivered a paper in Los Angeles in October this year as part of the Tongan Research Association conference about the importance of our language. Is it endangered? And who am I talking about? None other than Safita Haole. He is our special guest connecting our voices. Malolelei, sir.
Malolelei, Gladys. I think that was a very long-winded introduction.
Well-deserved.
I couldn't recognize myself in all of that. But, look, thank you. Thank you for having me, by the way. Appreciate the fact that you're giving me an opportunity to come and talk about my current obsession. How's that?
I like that. Well, you say current obsession, but it's pretty much been at the forefront of the work you've done for over the last 50-plus years. Indeed. Has been not only our voices, but keeping our language, keeping our culture alive. And that sort of kind of went out in different facets, didn't it?
Yes, you did. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I think to have a career in journalism, you can't avoid words. Or better say, you can't avoid using words.
Yeah.
And learning words. And to that end, it's inevitable that words and language became a very important part of my last 50-odd years, as you put it. And it began very early in the piece, but it became much, much more important when I realized that our language, the Tongan language, and I think is very similar to a lot of other Pacific languages too, that it became no longer fit for purpose. And that's the signal, and that's a very early part of the work. Because when you're writing bilingually, and you come to New Zealand and you look at the environment and you have stories you need to write, it's a process of transferring knowledge from one language to the other, right? And vice versa. And what became obvious, and I think any translator or any interpreter, anybody who works bilingually will understand that there is imbalance in the most powerful language in the world, which is English, and the less powerful, which is many of our minor languages. And why is that? And that's because our language, over the years, have become less and less likely to fulfill its role. In other words, it's become less and less fit for purpose. And we can talk about that, too.
Yeah.
I am, however, before anybody thinks that this is going to be a doom and gloom story, look, there is happiness, or there's light at the end of the tunnel,
right?
For Ngāna Samoa, and particularly for Le Whakatonga. And I'm hoping that the other languages who are more endangered than Le Whakatonga and Ngāna Samoa will pick up on the things that we'll be talking about,
right,
in order to save their language. That's if they want to save their language. It's very important, I think, that there ought to be a movement in our own communities built on a desire to and the need to preserve and bring your language back from the brink. I think that probably the classic examples close to shore would be the Hawaiian language. Te Reo is in the same mold, but so is Niuean and Tokelau. Huh? Mm. And there are reasons why each and every one of these languages will have a far steeper cliff to climb, or a steeper way ahead of them to achieve what I think is quite achievable for Ngāna Samoa and for Le Whakatonga. So, I'm very happy to come and share this with you because for quite some time, I think there had been a sense of depression amongst many of us who are working in languages, thinking that there is no light at the end of the tunnel,
yep,
particularly when we live out here in New Zealand. Surprisingly enough, for I don't know what it's like, but I suspect it'll be similar in Samoa as well. We seem to do a lot more for our language here in New Zealand.
I was going to say.
Than they do
in the nations.
Than internationally. Yep. Now, that's one of the things that we should explore today, too, because, and I guess I should say that at the very outset, the responsibility for surviving a language in perpetuity, forever, rests with the country, where the language was born.
Right.
It can only happen in Tonga, for Le Whakatonga, and it can only happen in Samoa, for Ngana Samoa. It should happen in New Zealand for Te Reo. Right? And we will soon see where that's like to go, but those are the dynamics that makes it very interesting for us to understand the, if you like, the language journeys that we all have. I'm more hopeful now than ever, and we can explain the reasons why.
Yeah.
But for quite some time, I obviously started writing bilingually when we were in Tonga, writing essays. I went to a school where English was compulsory. Once you're in school uniform, you can't speak Tongan. And you hear stories about that too. Here in New Zealand, where Te Reo was forbidden.
Yep.
And I think to some extent, some of the Samoan schools were like that too. But in Tonga, at Tonga High School, we were a school where we'd sit a national exam when you're age 10. And they take your top 35 students to go to Tonga High School, and the rest will be shared amongst all the other colleges too. But Tonga High School was built on a plan and a definitive plan by the Minister of Education at the time, who later became King George Bond IV. He decided that we ought to learn English, and the whole curriculum at school was taught in English by teachers from New Zealand and from other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to learn to speak English from, I think it's Form 1 or Class 6, all the way up to the fifth form, set school certificate, came to New Zealand, went to secondary school, third tertiary level education, and so forth. Right? So there was a generation in Tonga, and the school was built in 1947, established in 1947. There had been other schools before then, but that became, if you like, the huge turning point in what happened and had a huge impact on the survivability of the Tongan language. Or the way to put it, it challenged the prestige of the Tongan language. Suddenly there was another language that was made to look far more superior. In two sense, it was. It probably still is. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you lose the superiority of your language in your own country, right? And that's where the difference is likely to be, and it should be. And that's what we should be talking more and more about. The Tongan language can die in L.A. or in Utah or in wherever our folks are.
Or here.
Yes, or here. And it probably will, and it wouldn't matter. Because if alive and kicking back in Tonga, it will still live forever elsewhere, right? And that's the difference that we want to make.
Okay.
That's the point I wish to emphasize, not just to our community who have yet to understand the full impact of making Tonga responsible for keeping the language alive. Te Reo can only live in New Zealand. It is not Australia's responsibility to guarantee its survival in Australia, right?
Okay.
For Ngana Samoa, why should New Zealand take responsibility, for instance, for making sure that it's alive? We will contribute from New Zealand. It's inevitable that wherever Samoans are and wherever Tongans are, we will play our role, but we can never guarantee that it will live forever here. And we should be forcing, in our case, Tonga, force is probably the right word for it, because if they're not doing it, then they should be doing it, and they should be doing it now. Because with every passing day, it's slipping away slowly. And it does take a long, long time to bring it back. You can lose it in 20 years, but it might take 50 years to bring it back.
To bring it back.
Yeah.
So, excuse my ignorance, then why do we have these Pacific Language Weeks?
For very good reason. I think wherever we live, and I think it's socially acceptable for us to do it, it's a recognition of who we are. We ask for it. And I think for many, many governments, they recognize that it does help our the way that we adapt, the way we feel about ourselves, the way we feel about each other.
Right.
Right? Because if you recognize the importance of your language, you will know how important it is to other people. And there's respect that comes with being able to do that. Mm. The other thing is, it's probably a recognition, although many people won't say so, that there is more to life and more to the cultural well-being of this country other than English. Right? So it's important to make sure that it thrives. I think the other main reason, too, is that you won't be able to justify giving Te Reo the special place it's in without recognizing that maybe these folks would like to have a similar role for their language here.
Yeah.
But, of course, I make the difference, or at least the differentiation would be that you'll have politicians who come and go, and we're seeing that perhaps now more than ever before.
Yep.
They will come and change government policy.
Yes.
And they will come dole out the resources to make sure that the language is usable and alive and that the language is taught in New Zealand. You might be asking, well, why are they teaching French? Why did they teach Japanese? Why are we teaching Mandarin, for instance? So for all those reasons, there's a case for, and it's quite justifiable, that there are resources given for us to learn our language here. But it doesn't necessarily mean we have to rely on this to guarantee that it's going to live forever.
Gotcha.
And Tonga and Samoa in particular should not rely on New Zealand to do the job for them here. Right? We will provide the things that are needed because you'll understand that when I say that our language is no longer fit for purpose, and that is because our vocabulary has become almost... there's a dearth, there's a scarcity of words. It's simple as that, right? In English, the most powerful language in the world, if you want to go back to Shakespearean times, 800,000, maybe close to a million, right? Tongan words today, I think it's at the most, if you count some of the informal words that are now on social media that people have made up, close to 40,000.
Oh, okay.
So you can see the difference. And why does it matter? Well, if a word means an idea, which is what it is, there are obviously hundreds and thousands more ideas in that language, and there are few of them in this
language.
Right?
Okay.
So if you were to come to explain anything, in whatever language you want to choose, where are you likely to be successful at explaining the mathematical theorems that you require to sit school certificate, geometry, and pass? And how are you going to make sure that that knowledge is passed along to a young Samoan boy who is about to sit third and fourth form mathematics or geometry back home, which he needed if he wanted to become an architect, if you want to become an
engineer,
all of that. So you couldn't teach it in Tonga. So we're already being denied this knowledge that this language has, and that's what happened when our Prime Minister, Minister of Education in the 1940s decided to bring that knowledge from English and make that ours as well. And we did. And we were successful at it. But then our language never kept up. In other words, the theorems can be explained in Tonga. It can be.
Yep.
If we had the words for it. So we had to create the vocabulary to allow the knowledge to be transferred from one language to the other. And all the minor languages fail to do that. And when they fail to do that, it became less and less useful for purpose because you couldn't teach those new subjects that brought the new knowledge into your community.
Because you didn't have the vocabulary for it.
You got it, yeah. So first and foremost, we need to recognize that that's what happened. And in the case of Tonga, for instance, we did it to ourselves. We had no colonizers who came and said, you can't speak Tongan.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. We were...
Because Tonga prides itself on being the last of the Pacific nations that wasn't colonized, right?
Well, Tonga prides itself in never having been colonized, but we are also proud of the fact that we actually decolonized ourselves in the process. We voluntarily gave in. Okay. And I think that's probably one of the ways that you can describe it. We gave into the pressures of globalization, right? Because in order to join the rest of the world, you had to have the language of the rest of the world. So we imported English. We imported the tradition of English education.
And everything that comes with that.
Of course. And they were necessary, right? As you build an infrastructure of government, as you bring religion into the realm, into your environment, into your community, we had to bring that knowledge in that language, and to some extent, and I think you'll probably see where this is going to, the churches, in fact, were the main... I guess they were the main bodies that helped to write the English language in Tongan in the Bible, all right? You look at if you like, a textbook, a book that was very influential in shaping people's lives. When written in Tongan, it enriched our vocabulary beyond bounds. And for that, we have the churches and the work of our churches to be grateful for. Because in terms of all the entities, including our education system,
the
churches actually retained the use of the language. And one of the reasons for that was they wrote it down, right? The Bible was written. It was printed. The Palangis brought it over. We translated it, and we read it, and it kept a permanency that you could always go to and read. Stories were interesting.
Yep.
For those who read the Bible and understand, you, Gladys, I know you do, the Songs of Solomon, the Psalms, Jeremiah, those almost sort of poetic and wonderfully creative language in English. We were fortunate that we had translators in Tonga in the late 1800s, 1900s, who actually worked really hard with the missionaries at the time to make sure that the translations were as close as possible to the English creation. So, again, you know, it's not a criticism of Tonga's willingness to embrace the other language. It's more like a criticism of our inability to strike a balance between what we imported and paid a price for it by allowing our language to be to have language poverty. We didn't continue to translate as they've done with the Bible. Imagine if the mass textbook were equally translated.
Translated, yeah.
Imagine if the biological text were translated. Imagine if the health, imagine if the doctors, and we will get to this because we have just launched the first ever anatomy chart in Tongan. Right?
Oh, wow.
It's an app. That's part of what the society have done. How many years have we had a health system? We have never had an anatomy chart. When you look at the English anatomy chart, fully populated, every single item of your body is named. There's an explanation for it. It tells you the name of the disease, if you happen to have it, how to keep it healthy, etc., etc. And some of my friends in health might be a bit upset by this, but I will say this. I wonder whether the fact that we never had an anatomy chart contributed to the poor state of health that we're in.
Mm.
And the reason for that was that Well, each of us are given a body, right?
Yep.
You are the first doctor, if you like, to look after it. And what if you don't know what your body parts are, right? How can you maintain, look after it?
If you don't know.
If you don't have the names for it, right? I know.
Yeah.
We, each and every one of us, to some extent, are ignorant of what we have in our bodies.
Mm.
And I know that in 2023, I gave a short speech at a health conference, and I asked a question. I said to the Pacific people who were there, put your hands up if you have seen an anatomy chart in your language. And not a single hand went up. Mm-hmm. I know that Tadeo, I think, had one. And I know that there was a Samoan doctor, I think it was, it might be my, yeah, I'm sorry, I might got his name wrong, but he has since passed. I know that he wrote a health dictionary. But as for anatomy chart, what I'm hoping that will be is that every time you go and see your doctor, whether it's Palangi or Tongan, the anatomy chart should be pulled up on the laptop, and you'll be able, the doctor will say, this is what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
You now have anatomy charts that are animated, right? This is how, this is your condition. This is what's happening to you, and this is where it's at. I think that just having that one small step in making your language more fit for purpose for health is the signal of how a language can help you improve the situation where we are, and how the number of words you will have is so important to make sure that the language is fit for purpose. For the purpose of health, name your body parts. Tell people what it does. Tell people what the disease that's caused by it. You look at diabetes and you look at all the, if you like, the NCDs, the non-communicable diseases that we have. Each and every single one of those should have an explanation in our language. But more importantly, you know, when kids are at high school or in primary school, an NLP chart should be on the wall.
Right? Alongside
of
the
course,
uniform.
This is what your body is like. This is why we're getting to exercise. This is what happens when we bring the wrong food for lunch. If you do that, the chances are we probably won't need to fill up the hospitals as we do now. And I'm not just blaming the Pacific for this too, because I think the tendency would be that in the health sector, and I think that it's a indication that in terms of knowing our human bodies, the whole world is probably suffering in the same way.
Yeah.
Here we are, we got a gift. Our parents gave us.
Yes.
And what did we do with it, right? It's amazing that we explore the moon and explore the planets.
But we didn't hold on to this.
Yeah, and here it is. Here we all are, you know. I can't tell you all the bits and pieces that I have.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's the only body we have. And we have a saying that says, you know what? You don't know enough to be able to own a body.
But isn't that why translators are so vital? Isn't that part of it?
This is part of what importing knowledge into your language of things that you didn't know before is so important. And why it is that you need to build the vocabulary as you bring it over. And why it's important to write it down, right? Because if you don't write it down, it'll just come and go. And what might happen is that, and we have a similar situation now, where there are body parts that various people have given it names, but nobody quite know which is the right one because nobody has written it down and argued the point.
Okay.
Right?
So with that comes research, doesn't
yes.
it?
Comes research and comes with it an orderly way of getting things done. And we can get to that because that's part and parcel of what we're trying to do for Tonga. You see, and it's part of the, if you like, it's constructing a way of organizing the approach to make sure that the language actually live forever. If you make that the target, everything else will fall from it. If you're only doing this to, we need to survive the language, it's almost suggest, yeah, we survive until it dies.
And then what?
Yeah. The idea is the language ought to be preserved to live forever in the country of its birth, and then everything else will fly. And it will make sense then on what we need to do and what we don't need to worry about. It will make sense of the things that are, in other words, it's done for permanency. And here is the recipe for it. Happy to argue the point with anyone. Yeah. I didn't think that Tonga had a chance to preserve its language until we set up our university. And there's a reason for that.
Right.
Because every tertiary institution, every tertiary educated person in Tonga had to go overseas to qualify.
Oh, yeah.
Overseas, they teach you in English. And you pass the exam in English. And it's up to you to come back and translate
it
into Tongan in your own way.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't. And very often, there was no need to, because the country were always saying, well, English is fine. Because the prestige of English has been embedded so that it looks like that's the language. That's the one that opens up the world. That's the one that gives me my next good job. That's the one that enables me to do all the things that I, in other words, the globalization attitude meant that English was, well, it's compulsory. And I agree that that would be the case. Mm. Because what you might, I think might become clear to you, is that the recipe for Tonga, and I think for every other country, is to be bilingual.
Mm.
Right?
Yep.
The most powerful language in the world, to the point that I don't call English a language anymore. It is, in fact, the operating system. Right? Everything else is almost written in English, right? If you want to learn about life in China, you can learn that in English first.
Yep.
If China want to tell us what's like life back there, they tell us in English, not Mandarin.
Not Mandarin.
So it's, if you like, the brokerage for exchange of knowledge. So
it's a currency on its own.
Exactly. So it's inevitable you have to do it. It became the most powerful language in the world. Why and how? Just very quickly, I think the fact that they got involved in the French printing press, they printed books, they used religion, Christianity, they spread the gospel, and they colonized. All those things helped to, they took away their knowledge and gave it to other people and persuaded other people to take it as being part of what makes them who they are. Nothing wrong with that, because in the end, I think that their intentions were honorable to some extent. You can't blame the missionaries for wanting to come to the Pacific and say, we think we have a religion for you, and everybody bought into it, etc., etc.
Yeah.
But in bringing that knowledge and opening it up for people to be able to see, folks in Tonga and Samoa were curious then, what's like in the other part of the world?
Yes.
Look at all the people who left Tonga and went to England in the old days. We have the Mariner family in Samoa, by the way, are descendants of one of the best English historians that ever wrote a book about Tonga, because he ended up being a 14-year-old on a ship that was actually attacked and destroyed by Tongans, but they kept him alive to show the locals how to use the cannons, right? That's the Mariner family.
Right.
And he has, his descendants actually came back to the Pacific, lived in Mamau, they went to Samoa. So Lapi and his family are descendants from this Mariner person I'm talking to you about. But it's an example of how the curiosity about the world that they don't know about, which meant that they have to bring a language. Not that knowledge that they had were important to us as well. It's just that we forgot, and I think that we should have translated that knowledge, write it down in our language, even if you just borrow the words. It didn't matter, as we do now.
Yeah.
Right? But if you can find a more suitable word for it, by all means, write it down, use it, and what they call conventionalization. You conventionalize by using it in that way. There are elements of that already now. The unfortunate thing is, and you probably, in the old days, it was just a few words that we're peppered in the conversation about because it's something new and we haven't heard of.
Mm.
Today, almost every sentence, we are unable to speak our language more purely because we have been persuaded by the other more powerful language to conveniently bring it in the conversation, right? There are already words for it, but it's just that we haven't spoken, we haven't used it enough, we haven't seen it enough. It's never publicly put on show, and I'm talking about here with the understanding that we are not in Tonga. But if you were in Tonga, there is no excuse for you to be able to be to speak in almost pidgin Tongan. And that's sad, because it meant that you are no longer able to think in your language. You are bereft of the rich vocabulary we already have.
You can't express yourself.
Exactly. And I think that it, again, it degrades, for want of a better word, the prestige of the language, because it makes the language look as though it's not enough. And as long as people feel that the language is not enough, they won't be proud of it. They won't be using it. So our job is to actually make the language more fit for purpose, so that people will be proud of using it, more prouder than anywhere else in Tonga. So we have to make the...
Yeah.
I don't want New Zealanders to feel, or at least Tongan in New Zealand, feel as though, you know, it's up to us to do it here in New Zealand.
Right. It has starts at home.
We should be pressing the guys in Tonga to do it. In the global world that we have today, Tonga can teach the language globally from Tonga. But it's also likely that it would be taught from Tonga by teachers living in New Zealand and Australia. Because it's the mix of the two languages, the ability to handle both well, that will enable the transfer to be done.
Right? So with Society Le Whakatonga, that's what you're setting out to do, the Tongan Language Society?
This is what we have just signed up, I think it's this week, Thursday.
Ah, no.
We signed up a MOU with the university that we could work on many, many projects, and there are quite a few of them already. See, the app on the human anatomy was also launched in Tonga. It's been given to the nursing school for them to be able to use. That's the level of conventionalization that is required to make sure the language sticks. Write it down and preferably use it to teach. Because if you won't use it for formal teaching, it's unlikely to stick. Right? Mm-hmm. And if you use it for formal teaching, it means that there's a legitimacy that goes with it, and you can challenge it academically to see whether it stands scrutiny, and if it needs to be changed, then we need to change it. But if you don't teach it as a subject, you're leaving it to chance. And we see what happens when you leave things to chance. Rarely ever happens.
Where are we at in terms of, we say, but we're orators. Oratory is our rich, you know, where's the place for that?
You will only be an orator if you have a deep and meaningful understanding of your language, if you have the vocabulary for it.
Okay.
And number two, if you have the cultural understanding of what those words mean. If you look at idiomatic Tongan, idiomatic Samoan, the richness of the language that we have is there. It's probably not as many as what Shakespeare would have had, not as many as in English, but we do have them. But do you hear it often? The most often example that I hear in Samoan, I think, is that the sign of a good leader is to offer service.
Yep.
Right? Tongan say, let's roll out the mat to be. It is so basic. And when I say so basic, is if that's the depth of our cultural appreciation of our language, it's rich. You know, the, in our language, it's so rich of metaphors and ways of expressing yourself that would be, and I think our job is to be able to translate those things into English so that you know when and how to use it. We have a very fairly common saying, but I, and it can apply, poto poto a new mui, right? The wisdom of a young unripe coconut, right? The wisdom of a young unripe coconut. An unripe coconut is one that the meat is barely there to be able to eat it, and the juice surely there, but not sweet enough. But if you're a young, unripe coconut, you know little about what the real world is, yes, because you are not fully grown, you have not having got meat inside of you, you haven't grown old enough to be able to use for cooking. So the metaphor is present. It's almost like an apology. I apologize for the fact that I know very little. Because, you know, poto poto, you know, it's poto meaning to be wise or to be clever. Poto poto is the minimizing of that too. Only just a little bit of wisdom, as if you were a young, unripe coconut. Many, many proverbs that we have, you know, that are rarely ever in use, but that tells you about when you say orator, well, they're there, but why aren't we using it?
Why are we using it?
All right. And I think that that comes from the many things that we're talking about. If the language isn't prestigious in their minds, if they opt for the other one, for the English toolkit, because it's easier. Here in New Zealand, fully understand. But in Tonga, it should be discouraged. And I think you can't force people to do things that they don't like. Tonga is a free country. We're independent. But there are things that should be brought into play. Number one, if you're in the public service, your services should be provided in Tongan first. If you look at the Tongan Public Service website, most of that stuff is in English. I think that, see, this is where the churches are different too. Most of the services in churches now are fully in Tongan.
Yeah.
But you know what's creeping in with their Sunday schools in Tonga? Now they're beginning to teach them in English. Our preschool is starting to creep in, and what we're trying to do is to point out, look, give them a chance to speak Tongan until they're age 10 or 12, right? Let the education them kick in then, but to a large extent, if it's spoken at home, spoken well in the community, chances are it will remain. But it's equally important that at the very top end of it, where the new vocabulary, where the new knowledge is going to come from and where it will be taught, make sure we capture them and change them into Tongan so that it becomes conventionalized through the teaching of it. But I think here's something that will be discussed fairly openly, and hopefully it will be discussed with scrutiny to see where it's likely to go. When you have a university in Tonga and you have a university in Samoa, when you need to be bilingual, wouldn't it be nice if you could choose to either do your degree in Samoan or do your degree in Tongan,
yeah,
or in English, or perhaps in both? I have a list of probably 275 Tongan PhDs around the world.
Yeah.
They would have had to have write their thesis
in English.
I cheekily asked one of them, I said, would you mind writing a synopsis of your thesis in Tongan?
The language.
And how much would it cost, right? And my joke was, so that your grandmother can understand what it is that you already know.
Yeah.
And that was just a signal that if you were to provide the fullness of your education at all levels, and if it's possible to have that in your language, it will automatically lift the IQ and the knowledge base of your community to a much higher level than you would otherwise. Mm. Otherwise, now there is a separation of the people who do know stuff and the people who know little. And the great divide is done because of language acquisition.
So the haves and haves not of language in terms of poverty. I'm conscious
of time too.
You know, we could talk about this, but I read about a Japanese linguist.
Yes.
Studied 30 years of Tongan language culture, Yuko Otsuka. Was interesting, warned loss of language and English grows more prevalent in the islands. So obviously yous know this.
Yeah.
This is why the society exists.
Yes, and see, Otsuka went to Tonga, I think she went as a Episcopal volunteer.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And she had, the brilliant thing about Otsuka, you know, when we meet online, her Tongan is sometimes better than someone of us born and live in Tonga now. But she has an experience of the Japanese language.
Okay.
Which tells you that Japanese is powerful in Japan. It's spoken in Hawaii, it's spoken elsewhere in the world, but I believe that it will never die in Japan. And so is Mandarin in China, right? So is French in France. So is Spanish in Spain.
Yeah.
That's how you build a language that will live forever, right? In its own country, it should never be allowed to die. And I think what is happening is that Niue, I think they know how difficult and almost impossible for them to come back from the brink. Not only if they have a depletion of population, which doesn't help, but it makes it more difficult for Niue to retain the language in Niue.
Okay.
They don't have a tertiary institution. They don't have the, if you like, the bulk of population with an understanding of things in English that they could export back to Niue or import into Niue to infiltrate the community and make it what English is like here in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And that's why Samoa and Tonga have an opportunity, because they have the tertiary institutions that enables them, should they want to teach all the subjects in their language. It might take 50 years. It might take 60 years. But, you know, there is no price to losing your language.
And they've got the foundation there.
It's there, right? They just need to build on it. It shouldn't take long. And as we said before, Gladys, one of the reasons why I'm much more optimistic now than ever, because AI will become a most useful tool at every level to do the things that we'd like to do with the language.
Right.
You can now have a conversation in English with AI. It can read to you a book if you want, though you don't have to read it. It can teach you a language that you may want to teach. If you're Samoan and you're growing up in New Zealand and you want to, you don't necessarily have to go to school. Okay. AI can teach you, right?
Is it teaching you the right one, though?
Well, right or wrong, I think what it will do, and I know that the ChatGPT in Tongan, they do brilliant translations from Tongan to English. But from English to Tongan, there's a lot of Samoan words in there. There are a lot of Polynesian words, but not Tongan. But look, we can live with that.
Okay.
The point is that if can do that for other languages, in time, we will teach the machines. That's what needs to be done. No, it's up for Tonga to teach the machines.
Not the other way around.
The machines will retain it and will bring it back to the next generations to come. So I think that for those who might have any doubts about our ability to sustain our language in Samoa and Tonga to perpetuity, I say to you, it can be done. You just need Tonga and Samoa to say, well, you come to university, come to tertiary level, you have the option. Do your degree in English. We might even teach you in Samoan so you can understand. Teach them bilingually, you know, in the teaching of it, But you already have the text, if you like, written down in Samoan. You have the text written down in Tongan. Sit your exam, and here's the exam paper. Answer me in either language. It wouldn't matter. And that signals that the two languages in Samoa are equally important.
And can coexist.
Yes, happily. Happily. They can borrow from each other. Mm. But you also need to know that if you're using it,
yep.
respect your language and use it well.
Yeah.
Don't bastardize it by your failure to take on board the fact that I need to speak this with the clarity and the ability to express yourself fully. In other words, take some time to think about what you're going to say so that you don't continually import words into your speech that already has a Samoan equivalent, that already has a Tongan equivalent.
Don't make up something.
Yeah. If you have to bring in a word that you don't, if you want to explain Russell's paradox, I can understand why it will be difficult.
Yeah.
Right? But if you're welcoming your family or you're speaking in front of a group about things that are local, there should be no excuse for you to bring in words that are already in our vocabulary. Right, okay. It's the degree at which you respect your language that will help, because you're then setting examples for the others to make sure that when they come and speak publicly, that they give it some thought and make sure that it's spoken with pride and, if you like, with the oratory that you so look to bring on board.
and I guess, so like with the paper that you presented in LA earlier this year, how was that taken?
Well, we did it online, by the way.
I think
it was Santa Ana, but the Tongan Research Society meets, it should be every year. It was set up many, many years ago by one of my former teachers back in Tonga at the Atenese Institute. There are several. There's a Dr. Latu Kefu, Dr. Helu, and there are others who formed the core of scholars from the 1940s, 50s, who started to question the way that Tonga's education system was set up. And that set us off this journey, and then I'm on, started way back then.
Right.
And they set up the research association to deal with things, you know, whatever new information are being brought on board, how do we... And more of our young students who are overseas, of course, they're less and less bilingual now. And I think that we're trying to reawaken. Mm. And I think that amongst anybody, any Tongan who's doing tertiary education would already know that. Because it has become part of the characteristic of, I think, of any Samoan, any Tongan, any Cook Island person who have achieved higher education and recognize who they are, will know this, that if you're Tongan and you're not speaking a language that's Tongan, there is something missing, right? If you're Samoan and the language you speak is not Samoan, there is something missing. And they will always wonder about that. And I certainly don't want to get everybody to feel so depressed about that too. But it raises, you know, we see it often, you know, their wish to speak the language. It's almost like an undying desire from within. The difficulty, of course, is how do they do this? And this is where AI, I think, will become more and more important. You could do this on your own now, because very often they turn up at age 21, 22, to go to a class where the kids are 14, 15-year-old learning Tongan. You can imagine what that does to a person who wants to speak Tongan, may not have the time, may not wish to embarrass themselves in front of other people. I think that will happen. So the research, the paper that was given was just to reemphasize what we talked about today.
Yes.
Tongan language is no longer fit for purpose. The reasons why, the symptoms of why it's happening, and what we need to do to bring it back. And by talking to as many people as we can in this frame of mind, I'm hoping that we will be able to persuade Tonga to take responsibility, to make sure the language thrives forever in Tonga. We will only benefit from that. The fear is that apparently if we don't look after it elsewhere in the world, then it will die. It won't. If it lives forever in Tonga, everybody will benefit. Now, again, modern communications, internet, all of that,
yep.
You could be talking Tongan to Tonga, but Tonga should be, if you like, the
epicenter of it.
It is. And so it should be for Ngan Samoa. So it'd be for every other language. If they do that, and I guess what I'm advocating for, and I haven't made this too public, but I'll say it now because we have a new government next week. I believe that our constitution actually preserves a lot of what makes Tonga what it is. Our freedom, right? Our religion, our culture. So I'm saying, why not our language? I think a constitutional amendment to guarantee that it will never perish in Tonga, which means that it should be made to thrive forever, will be the guarantee that I would celebrate, because that will finally achieve what we're looking to do.
It should be there anyway, shouldn't it?
If it's there, they're certainly not acting on it.
Yeah.
But we know that it's not there yet.
Yeah.
You know, because once that's done, I think there'll be a language commission. I think the public service will have to sit a particular exam in Tongan to make sure that you can speak Tongan to your public. The policies might be written in Tongan first and then written into English at some point in future. I think that the churches will now see more clearly and be grateful for the fact that the rest of the country will now be speaking the same language. And the more bilingual your nation would be, the more likely that the level of the IQ and your ability as a nation and everything else will just be lifted so much higher. It's not difficult to be bilingual.
So what's media's role?
To do its bit as well, and we are guilty too, as you know. We suffered in the same situation as every other profession, and that is that we were taught, we had to go overseas to learn journalism,
yep.
Right? And in doing so, we grew up, for instance, and up, by the time you get the fifth form in Tonga and sixth form and sit the national exam, English was compulsory, but not Tongan, because they very assumed that you should know it. And then you turn up to apply for a job. If you pass your English, you get an extra increment in pay. Not so for Tongan.
Because it was a given, you would know.
Well, it just shows you that there was no intrinsic value given to it when it should have been.
When it should have been.
And it's all part of this mindset that English is so much better. No, they're equally as good. And you need them both and should be rewarded for. Now I think the story for Tonga would be, English is good, but if your Tonga is not good enough, you're not getting a pay rise.
Yeah.
If you're working in the public service, yeah. Right? And I think that for media, as you say, well, when radio started off in Tonga, we had a language guardians. And he was a noble, his name is Vehala, and he was renowned for going on air and telling broadcasters what they're doing wrong. This is the word, you shouldn't be using this word, you're misusing this word. Here's the authority. In other words, he was a public critic of how the language was used in the media. And people listened. We don't have such a person anymore. And yet we should.
It could be you. 2026.
No
Sofita Haole. Great things must come to an end. Blessings to you. Christmas 2026. We're going to hear more. This isn't the last time we're going to talk. You've given us so much to think about. Maloa pito Sofita. We will talk again.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Gladys.
PW Live, connecting our voices with Sofita Haole. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here next Saturday. We're all on the line. Make this your time.